It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 18th of October 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 18th of October, Sharon Brown talked with Michelle Barber about the Jazzy Dean Garden Safari. She spoke with two of the people involved with the military vehicle parade on Waiheke Island. She spoke with brewer Alan Knight about an upcoming beer festival, and she played an interview recorded by Brent Simpson with Miriam Lawler from Direction Mātiatia.
I'm looking, Alan's just come in. Alan, come and talk to me for a minute. We're going to get interrupted by... I'll just put you on there. We're going to get interrupted by Michelle talking about the Jazzy Dean Garden Safari.
Hooray.
But welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, look, have you heard about this, the Stony Batter fundraiser?
I was just driving through Surfdale earlier, and there were all kinds of exciting-looking vintage military vehicles.
Yes, on the corner of Hamilton.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
And, you know, the small boy inside me wanted to stop and get out and have a look at them.
Yes.
Always had a soft spot for military vehicles.
Ah, lovely.
I know they, you know, nasty things, but they are kind of beautiful.
Well, they told me that I just like them because they're old as well.
Yeah.
And you can sort of, you know, and you could probably fix them yourselves. Even I could probably fix one of those cars. I'm sure they're really simple.
I've no idea about these things. But I know I love them. They looked wonderful.
So when I asked the guy, he said they were going to be down at Little O from 10:30 to 11. But I'm just looking at the What's On guide, and it says here that they're going to be down at Oneroa Beach from 10:30 to 11. So, yeah, keep a lookout. Not sure which of those beaches, but one of them anyway. And then they're going to Palm Beach via Hauraki Road and Onitangi Road via Crescent Road West and Seaview Road. Then they're going to leave Onitangi between 12:30 to 1, or they're going to, I guess they'll just be on show at Onitangi from 12:30 to 1, and then they're going to motor out to Stony Batter. I like the way those old vehicles, they don't drive,
they motor out. Yes.
And then they're going to be on display there for the rest of the afternoon, and some will stay on site and set off at 10:45 on Sunday for Man of War Bay. Then they're going to be at Ostend tomorrow at 1 p.m. before returning to Auckland on the 4:30 sailing. That just sounds like such fun, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, good. And what else? So I'm just on the What's On guide, so I'll just finish this. And what have we got? The Rocky Bay Spring Brunch at Rocky Bay Hall. So that's joining the Waiheke Resources team for brunch and talking about the Waiheke Kai Conscious Project can help you save money, food and the environment. And I spoke to someone in solid waste last week, and he said that I think it's something ridiculous, like 40% of the waste to landfill is food scraps. So if you can get rid of that, especially when we swap to a user pays model, you could save yourself heaps of money. And of course, if you don't use as much food, then you're not putting that much pressure on the environment. So it's a win-win-win. So if you want to find out about that, that's at Rocky Bay Hall, 9:30 tomorrow. Then there's, racing starts at the Waiheke Dirt Track at 11:30 on Sunday. And there's the Stony Batter fundraiser, which we talked about before. Great. And then Waiheke Golf Club on Tuesday have got Dad's Army from 9 a.m. Is that playing golf from military vehicles or what is that?
I have no idea.
I don't know, but it sounds quite interesting. Oh, and line dancing. Have you ever line danced?
No.
I have to go. Waiheke RSA at 9 a.m. line dancing. Oh, so you can't actually go half cast then, can you? You actually have to be really with it if you're going to be doing it at 9 in the morning. Anyway, good. So, great. So
what a lot that's going on.
I know there's a lot. It's amazing. I just really feel that it's kind of, you know, we've kind of been dormant, and we'll be hearing from Michelle in a minute about the Jazzy Dean Garden Safari. But it just feels like we're kind of going into a different level of events.
Yes.
On the island.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
Summer is starting.
Yes, indeed. Great. So do you want to hang out with us?
And, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Michelle, yes, I'm just asking my producer to ask Michelle to come over, but as I don't have a producer, I actually have to yell on air. I Michelle, how are you going? So, I don't think it matters. I think both mics are working. I'm just not sure which ones they are, but I think that's it. So Michelle Barber is events organizer extraordinaire for the Garden Safari. Michelle, how long have you been doing that for?
This is my fourth year, actually.
Right. Now, why can't I hear you? Can I hear you now?
Can you?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, good. Great. So it's your fourth year. Lovely. Yeah, well, I've just really noticed how that event has grown.
Good. Mm. Good. I'm glad you noticed that.
Yes.
We've done a lot of work. And we have an incredible number of volunteers. And that's really what the event is based on, is all these volunteers who give their time and do so much for the community.
Great.
That's what we're all about.
Lovely. Really. So tell us what we've got this year.
Well, we have Garden Safari going on the 8th and 9th of... Is that okay, sound-wise?
Yeah, no, it's all good.
8th and 9th of November, which is in 3 weeks from today. And as well as the Waiheke Art in the Garden art auction out at Rarahara Pai Melon Bay. So that'll be really cool. Lots of local artists and food and Waiheke wine and Waiheke beer. And so that'll be very cool. And we have some gardens, some great gardens this year. Actually, some gardens that people just have never seen before. And they probably won't because they're just private and won't be open to the public.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So the art auction, who have we got exhibiting there? Or
We have some good ones.
Oh, great.
We have some good ones. Virginia King will have a piece in our art auction this year. And Katie Trinkle Legg, who's been with us the whole time, which is great. Dennis O'Connor has a work. Anton Ford, Emma Wright, Emma Hughes will have a photography piece. Sorry, I keep moving my head around. Lots of local stuff.
Lovely. So, that's always a great event, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun night, and it's out on this, Rarahara is just a stunning beach to be at.
So that's the beach at Pai Melon Bay.
And
of course, that's also private property, so we don't get a chance to stomp around on it.
We don't.
And it's really quite a luxury to be able to go down there have a glass of wine and look out at the bay. And
John Hawksbee works his auction magic, and we have some good food and good wine, and it's cool.
Mm, lovely. Mm. Good. So that's the kickoff, isn't it?
That is. That's November 7th, and people can buy tickets at Take Note Waiheke, Waiheke Eyesight, and then iticket.co.nz. if they're off island.
Lovely. And how much are the tickets?
$65.
That's for the auction.
That's for the auction, and that includes
and
wine and appetizers and beer and a fabulous evening.
Mm, lovely.
Yep.
Great. So that's the auction. So that kicks it off. And then what happens?
And then some of the highlights this year is we have a garden that's called Long Valley Estate. It's on the cover of our brochure. Long Valley Estate is... out past, it's a 10-minute drive past Padere Creasy, and it's behind a locked gate. What we're doing is we are shuttling people from the paddock that's just past Padere Creasy, and we're shuttling them out to this garden because it's too narrow a road and not very safe for people to drive out there. So we're going to shuttle everyone out there, and Graham from Around Waiheke Tours is doing that for us, which is fantastic. Let's see, Urban Escargot will be out there having food for the day and coffees and stuff like that. Anton Ford will be carving a waka.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that'll be good. Timmy Smith, a jeweler.
Are these all at the same place?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all at Long Valley Estate. So people really should prepare to be there for a good 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
I would say. So, and then they'll shuttle back. We asked for a koha, not necessary, but we would, we'd like some help on that. And it's really just a kind of an afternoon or a morning, but plan on being there for a good 2 hours, I would say.
Lovely. So the shuttles are going every little while?
Every 12 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
And so that's separate from the Garden Safari ticket?
No, that's included in the Garden Safari ticket, and included in Yeah, included in the whole thing. So that's just one
of
the gardens.
Is it possible to go to that separately?
Or? No, it's not. Okay, yeah. Right, okay. It's amongst the 13 gardens that are a part of the...
Of the Garden Safari.
Of the Garden Safari,
okay,
yeah.
Lovely, good. Cool. So, and what, so that's one of the gardens.
We have another one that is, we're doing something different this year where we have a sundowner garden. And this is out at Margaret Reeve Lane. On Saturday, it's open from 3 to 8 p.m. instead of the normal 10 a.m. to 4. And people can take their Garden Safari ticket, get into the sundowner garden. They can buy a gourmet barbecue. There's cocktails, sunset cocktails for sale. DJ Chica Licorica will be spinning some bossa nova tunes. So it'll be a good night. And it's positioned where you can watch the sunset.
So where is this place?
75 Margaret Reeve Lane.
Okay.
And so
and
you
it's
can,
a venue or it's a house?
No, it's
or?
A garden. Oh, it's a garden.
Lovely.
It's our sunset garden. So
it looks out over...
towards Auckland.
Okay.
Yeah, so you see the sunset over... Mm. Atlantis is what I like to call it.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, good. And so people can, if you have a Garden Safari ticket, bring that with you to show at the gate. Or if you don't have a Garden Safari ticket, pay $10 on the door and come in for a night.
Well, that's nice because that's a nice opportunity for people who might not have time for the whole Garden Safari but feel like listening to some bossa nova, which I do love. It has to be one of my favorite kinds
of music. We'll see you out there, Shred.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, terrific. Good. Yeah. And other things of note?
We have our massive plant sale.
Oh, my God. We're being stormed by some guy in a uniform. There's two of them. They're approaching the door. Dun, 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 dun. Military vehicles.
Scary.
Purposeful men in uniform marching towards the door. Oh, lovely. Oh, hi, guys. We're just right in the middle of finishing this bit, and then we'll have you on for a few minutes. Is that okay? Great. Terrific. Thank you. Right. Lovely. Mm. So
we have our massive plant sale out at Rangihau Estate, Olive Estate, on Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4.
Great.
And that's a great fundraiser for the Jazz Eating Trust.
Mm. So is it still possible for people to get involved by boxing up plants or ripping off bits of cacti and putting them in pots? Or have we got all your plant collection?
Well, no, our volunteers work on that starting the day after Garden Safari.
Okay.
And they start propagating plants all year.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And do they run out quite quickly?
They have never really completely run out. So,
great. Wow.
Yeah. There'll be plenty of plants for people at reasonable prices.
Lovely.
And it all goes to the Jazz Eating Trust.
Yes. So do you want to just put in a quick word for them?
Yes. Yes.
Where the money's actually going. Which,
yes.
I mean, obviously it's an event in itself and we love it, but it's also raising money in a good cause.
It is. Garden Safari, Waiheke Island Garden Safari is the main fundraiser for Jazz Eating Trust. We raise about $67,000 to $70,000 each year for the trust. The trust then... helps kids out around the island. I was helped out actually just recently with my son.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's.
So what did they do for you, or what?
Well, they
just
gave me at the doctor's office. They gave me an envelope with ferry tickets and some cash, so I could get to the doctor and get to the hospital in town and get him sorted out.
Lovely.
No,
oh well, that's
great.
Incredible. So that was just sorted out by the doctor's office. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and Jazzy Dean provides those envelopes and makes sure that parents can get their kids across.
Because it can be such a. Such a drain on your pocket.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
my son was ill and then we had to go up and then, you know, they're sort of, they let you out at an ungodly time. I think they let us out at like, you know, 20 past 11 or something, and we had to
you're
hop
stuck.
In a cab to get in, get down to
rush
the ferry
and
you know, potentially you're, you know, if you can be quite a lot out of pocket for something really, really unexpected.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't need to be there and they send you home, but they might send you home at 2 o'clock in the morning. You don't know. But, you know, they do a lot of good and they help a lot of kids. The trust is all volunteer based and they've been doing it now for 20 years.
Lovely.
And they work really hard.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
No
and
problem.
I look forward to,
thank
you know, coming to some of those events.
Good.
And
I
sounds
hope to
really
see you on
exciting.
At the Sundowner Garden.
Yeah.
Sharon?
Yes,
good.
I will be.
Okay.
Dancing away.
Yeah, good.
In the background.
Thanks we'll take
a lot.
Your photo.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay, right. Lovely. Okay, well, I'll just put on track and then we'll chat to the men in uniform. the men in brown as opposed to the men in blue. But yes, good. What have we got here? Happy. So I've got Peter and
Greg,
who've come up with the military vehicles. So welcome. And thank you for taking the time to come up to the radio station. So just before we start, we just want to clarify that thing of whether it's Oniroa or Little Oniroa, and the boats are in fact at Oniroa.
Yep, the vehicles are sitting down on Oniroa Beach.
Adjacent to the launching ramp.
Lovely. Now that mic does not seem to be working very well, so you might be more comfortable sitting over here. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. Because I don't hear anything coming through there. Okay, right. So at the boat ramp on Oniroa Beach. Lovely. So tell us about the club then. What's it all about?
Well, the club's made up of about 200 members nationally. There's a number of people who are not members of the club but have got military vehicles. But it's the New Zealand Military Vehicle Collectors Club, and the emphasis on collection and restoration of military vehicles, predominantly World War II, but some stuff is later than that, sort of fairly recent even.
So are the oldest vehicles World War II?
Yes, the majority of them on the beach at the moment are World War II.
Lovely. And they're all, they've all got warrants of fitness so they can be driven around.
Well, you shouldn't ask questions like
oh,
that.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
The answer's
okay.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
No,
the answer
is all
yes.
Road legal.
Yeah. Ah, and so where do you get the parts to fix these? Do they come from overseas? Are they within New Zealand?
Yeah, we can get parts for Dodgers and Jeeps easily. Others, like Greg's Canadian military patent Chev, sometimes a little harder, but there's a lot of parts for those in New Zealand.
Mm. Mm. And you end up needing to be quite resourceful and make parts?
We do make parts, yes, and there are a lot of remanufactured parts available for the vehicles, especially the Jeeps.
Mm. Okay. So are you all you're all quite good mechanically then to be able to do all of that?
Yes, most of us are mechanically minded or mechanical background. Yes, it's a bit like vintage car collectors, vintage aircraft collectors. We just specialise in the military vehicles themselves. So
lovely. So what drew you to the military vehicles?
Mainly the technology involved in them, the four-wheel drive and the winching and general design and development of these vehicles for most of them were designed to go into combat and only last 3 days, but they have a lot of technology in them which seem to be going to the scrapyard and not being preserved. So we have taken the opportunity of preserving a lot of these vehicles throughout the country. And that's where we're at today. We have quite a large collection of authentic military vehicles in New Zealand.
Mm. Oh, lovely. So how many are there around the country then, do you think?
Well, there's roughly 200 members, and a lot of them would have one, two, maybe even four or five. Some of them have got sheds full of them. But, Greg's got a couple. I've got three. But most of them on the beach here, there's one of the guys collecting Jeeps here. He's got seven or eight Jeeps or something, I think, at the last count. So
that was an interesting thing that you said, that they're designed to only last a short time?
Well, most of them were designed to go into battle or combat, and they possibly would only last 3 or 4 days in that area.
Right.
But, as I said,
who did you get to drive them? That's a bit creepy. This car is only designed for 4 day use. Who wants to drive it today?
Well, they were manufactured and issued to the soldiers who
had
used
no choice.
Them and trained in them and eventually went to war with some of them.
So, what's the oldest one you've got?
Well, it's probably yours, isn't it?
Mostly in the 1942 era. Most of our military vehicles in New Zealand here were produced around 1942.
In New Zealand?
Yes.
Right.
Which is really halfway through the Second World War. Prior to the Second World War, back in the 1939s, companies were being asked to produce and design vehicles for combat and war use. And that's when they started drawing up the designs and blueprints and getting them approved. And then manufacture went on instantly in 1942.
Ah, interesting. And so they would mostly have been used in the Pacific?
Some.
Well, Egypt, Europe.
Right, so they made them here and then took them across to Egypt.
Yeah, they were used in all the theatres of war in the Second World War. And as I said, they began design in 39 and produced the majority in 42.
So is the design different from the other, you know, the military vehicles produced in Europe, or it was made to very similar specifications?
Well, the likes of Jeeps, they were made to a standard pattern. I mean, the Americans were pretty clever like that. They didn't have a plethora of vehicles. You'd have the likes of Ford and Chev making the identical vehicle, and you'd have Dodge would do their own thing. But things like, you know, just fuel gauges and starter motors, they're all interchangeable between a whole lot of them, so that it made their parts side of things. If something broke down, and, you know, in action, they could pull a part off virtually anything and get it going again. But Greg's comment about them sort of only being designed for use in a short while, they've actually proved anybody wrong, because they're very reliable, you know, they're very robust. But they weren't designed for hanging around and for any length of time. They had a pretty limited, well, supposedly limited lifetime.
And so have you ever had to use them for something, you know, like to winch something out of something? Or have you got any interesting stories of an application of a military vehicle in your
We do go off road runs and four wheel drive runs into forests and farms, and we do get them stuck, and we do winch each other and tow each other out, but it's not real serious off-roading like you would get in a four-wheel drive club, for instance. But ours is more of a fun family sort of a club.
So that would have been quite interesting to have the same vehicle that's used in Egypt, which is the desert, and then used in the Pacific, which is jungle and damp.
Yeah,
a lot of the stuff that that was in the Pacific was actually American built.
Oh, was it?
And they left most of it there, so drove them off the ends of wharves and things like this. And so there's a lot of stuff been left up there. But the Americans sent a lot of stuff back here to particularly to Lower Hutt, where they were reconditioned by General Motors and things like that. So and a lot of that stuff stayed here in the New Zealand Army too. You know, there was issues.
Oh, interesting. So a lot of the Pacific stuff ended up coming back. Well, some of the Pacific stuff came back to New Zealand.
Yeah,
lovely.
Correct, yeah.
So have you got some American vehicles in the stuff that you've got then as well?
I think most of them are American, I think.
Yes, we've got quite a lot of American Jeeps, Dodges, GMCs, things like that.
So are they all things that came to New Zealand from a war effort, or are they things that were bought actually, you know, online, or that you bought in the States and then brought over?
Some were bought into New Zealand by our own Defence Department, such as some of our scout cars and tanks that we're running here. Yes, they were all bought in by our own Defence Department for training purposes.
Right. Okay, right, now the phone is ringing. Well, I'm just going to ignore that for a second. Not very successfully, but okay. And I guess the next thing is, what's actually happening with today?
Well, today, after we leave here, we'll motor over to Palm Beach. Through Palm Beach, some of the boys have got to drop gear off in Ostend, so it could be interesting getting through the marketplace. Yeah, it could be quite interesting getting through Ostend, you know, during being market day. But then we'll head up Seaview Road to Onitangi, and then from Onitangi out to Stony Batter. Now, the whole idea of the weekend is a fundraiser for the restoration of the Stony Batter coastal battery. So we'll be up there all afternoon on display, so people can come up there. I understand if people come out, there's rides, I think, from the battery up to the camp and back, and we'll stay there overnight, and we'll head away in the morning.
Lovely.
We'll be at the RSA from Ostend from 1 o'clock till about 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Great. And when are you doing, you think you'll be doing the rides sort of tomorrow afternoon, this afternoon sometime?
It'll be this afternoon, and we don't know how many people will be out there, but be a gold coin donation to Sue out there to help her cover
Lovely.
Some of the costs, and we'll
Lovely.
Take it from there.
Great. Thank you so much. That sounds really exciting. And have a lovely
you.
Day.
Thank you.
Thank
Cheers.
You for having us.
Great. Thank you. So that was Greg and Peter from the, what do you call the military?
New Zealand Military Vehicle Collectors Club.
Oh, New Zealand Military Vehicles Collectors Club. Terrific. Thank you so much for coming in.
Wakey Radio.
Good. Right. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great. So tell us about the beer festival.
Okay. Yes. Well, it's nice to be on here talking about my ruling passion of beer rather than politics as usual. But yeah, the this is an inaugural event. This is taking place at Malone's Craft Beer Bar in Surfdale next weekend. The idea is to showcase a whole lot of existing and one-off brews made right here on the island.
Great.
So there will be, there's four brewers taking part. There's myself, there's Jerry Wayne of Relativity Brewing, Tahi Road. A new and mysterious brewer known as the Fairy Hop Mother, who has produced a very exciting pale ale.
Did the Fairy Hop Mother used to make fairy wings?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. She's produced an amazing pale ale made with beetroot.
Oh, wow.
Which is a surprisingly tasty ingredient in beer.
Oh, lovely.
We're also very glad that the former island resident Ben Middlemas, who's sort of the great godfather of New Zealand craft brewing, is going to be joining us as well. So the event is going to take place next Saturday and Sunday. That's over Labour weekend. So that's starting at 12 and running till 5 for the first session. Then from 6 till midnight, which will be the second session. We're doing that both days. That will give us an hour in the middle just to sort of take some time out, get tidied up and everything. The admission is $15 for advanced sales or $20 on the door. We've got a number of different food matches and so forth going on, German-style food to go with the beer. And we reckon on having something like 20 different beers available over the course of the weekend.
Okay.
Are you back there just answering the phone?
Yeah. Right, sorry about that.
Okay, you missed all that. Yes, I was just giving all the times and so forth.
Wonderful. Thank you, Alan. It's just that my daughter is madly phoning me from the market and I was worried that something had happened to her, so I couldn't not take it.
Ah, right.
But it's actually fine and she wants to go to her friend's house and is that okay? the fact that I might be on radio and...
Hadn't occurred to her.
No,
kids,
hadn't occurred to her at all. So, look, I'm sure as long as everyone knows what's going on, and tell me about this beetroot, because we'd talked about that before. That
I believe
someone
we
was
did,
going
yes.
to make a beetroot.
It's something that we have been playing around with a little bit before.
But is it red?
It is. It
Lovely.
Is. It's Good. Delightfully red.
So is she making some to sell?
Yes. Yep.
Lovely.
We have a batch on for the beer festival. The lovely thing about this, though, certainly for people like myself who've been in the industry for such a long time, is that, I mean, I first got into the industry in the mid-80s. And there was a lot of very sort of strange resistance to us in the marketplace, a certain amount of mistrust. Dear, oh dear, bloody telephones.
Sorry.
And
no, I didn't, but I'm on there. Are you coming?
Oh, things are very informal in here this morning, aren't they?
Okay, right, thanks a lot, bye. Okay.
You don't get this at the BBC, do you?
You don't. My producer has just told me that Catherine won't be able to make it today because she's not feeling well. So sorry about that.
So it's back when this industry got going, it had a lot of people who were very resistant to the idea of it. They sort of saw it as homebrew, and if it wasn't from the big breweries, it couldn't possibly be beer. Which was a very frustrating start to the industry. But what we didn't realize back in the late 80s, early 90s, was that our target market was still in primary school. And it's only now that we've got a sort of a new generation who've grown up knowing that beer is supposed to be incredibly exciting and not just cold, fizzy, dull stuff. So It's been a very long wait, waiting for this to happen, but it's rather nice that it finally has.
Mm. You know, the other thing is, I think it's also part of a general craft revival. I'm noticing that at AUT, that on the one hand, you've got people getting into digital and, you know, everything becomes digital. There's almost nothing that's tactile and everything is a sort of a, you know, computer mediated process. And now what we're finding is that those courses that had kind of gone in the bin, like bookbinding or screen printing,
are all coming back. Yes.
They're all coming back because people actually want, or, you know, old fashioned filmmaking where you splice the film and tape it together. All of those things are coming back because there's actually a sense in which you have a go, not with a mouse or,
yeah,
you know, and you
well,
see
this is the lovely thing, of course, with
things.
Craft brewing. This is an industry that simply does not rely on anything computerized. It's all just handmade stuff. But there is a sort of a tendency when newspapers and so forth report on craft brewing, they still have this annoying thing of treating beer like it's something a bit naughty. Mm. But
what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, beer is, because it's alcoholic, there's this kind of, you know, that's a little bit naughty, rather than, you know, the rather more mature attitude that's taken to it in Europe. But we're not really doing anything that isn't happening with, say, tea, coffee, cheese, meats, breads. All of these things have improved vastly in the last few years. People are far more interested in artisan products. Mm. And beer is just another one of those things. It's just gets treated a little bit differently because, you know, it's alcoholic.
Mm-mm. But it's true. It's almost been that thing where beer has just been some sort of swill that you just drink at some ball game,
yeah,
rather than being something that you actually kind of savour the taste.
Something you take incredibly seriously.
And maybe, yeah, exactly, you know, and you might just have one of as opposed to 1,000 of, or, you know,
yeah,
and really savour those flavours.
Well, I think we can certainly guarantee for anyone turning up next weekend at Malone's Craft Beer Bar, there will be some really fascinating beers to try.
Great. And now I'm just thinking, is the Wild Food Challenge, that's also next week,
that's
isn't it?
On the Monday.
It's on the Monday.
Yeah,
right.
The beer festival at Malone's is just the Saturday, Sunday. But on Monday, of course, yes, we have the Wild Food Challenge at Wild on Waiheke.
Mm, are you involved in that?
I'm involved in that too, yes.
Great. Tell us all about
myself
that.
And Russell Derlew have been asked to judge in the drink category.
Oh,
not sure
and
how many entries
Russell
we'll get.
Makes the.
He makes Wild Days Rum. Yep.
Yeah.
And I entered into the spirit of things with this by producing a small batch of beer for next weekend. Because I was trying to think of something that could be a wild ingredient for a beer. Not the easiest thing in the world until I thought of gorse flowers.
Oh, interesting.
Which are, they're delightful to work with, actually. I made a batch of gorse flower lager.
Mm.
And I'd love to make it again, except someone else can go and pick the gorse flowers next time.
Oh, how much did you need?
I needed about 300 grams.
And how,
it doesn't sound like very much, but when
that?
You're walking...
Like a bag?
Yeah, when you're sort of picking through the hedgerows and getting gorse prickles in you.
It's not very fun.
It's not much fun.
Oh, I've got an idea. I'm just... wormwood? Is it called wormwood? I don't know if it's called... There's a plant that's quite aromatic. It's sort of greyish... blue, looks like a mop, and it's really used in the Moroccans and Arabic people tend to use it to make tea and flavour tea with.
Well, wormwood's one of the ingredients in absinthe, I believe.
Yes, it is, and so that's why people kind of shy away from it.
Yes,
and go,
absinthe, the drink that makes you want to kill yourself.
But you know that absinthe has made a comeback, and
I know
people are kind of
yes.
going, oh, well, you know, maybe all of that stuff about absinthe, maybe those people were crazy anyway, and it wasn't the absinthe,
yes.
It was maybe just the people who were drinking it, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But it's just so aromatic. I don't know. What do you need? What are the qualities that add flavour to, because they're often quite unexpected, aren't they, the things that flavour beer?
It's an incredibly long list of things you can make beer with. I mean, some of the more common ingredients are things like fruits, particularly raspberries, cherries, blackcurrants.
Right.
They make a wonderful addition to wheat beers. There's a German wheat beer that's made using salt. Of
oh,
all
okay.
things.
And does it come out
yes.
being quite salty?
Yeah, reasonably yeah. salty.
Mm. Lavender?
I don't recall ever trying a lavender beer. I've certainly tried a seaweed beer. Chilies are quite a popular one.
Mm, well, you've made
chili
a very
lager.
Lovely,
I think you've probably tried some of my chili lager.
That actually looked beautiful as well. It
yeah.
just had that. There was something about it that was so clear. It was a really striking colour.
But there's, yes, I think it's just that the brewing industry has moved beyond this idea where it just has to be about rather dull drafts and lagers, and we are getting into all kinds of fascinating stuff. Mm. And beetroot is just one of those things on the list.
Yes.
Strangely enough, beetroot comes out tasting like strawberries.
Oh, does it?
Which is a damn sight more than strawberries do. Strawberries are one of the more disappointing fruits for brewing with. They don't really bring any flavour or colour at all. Mm. If you want your beer to taste of strawberries, you use beetroot.
Isn't
it's much
interesting?
Better.
Yeah. Oh, it's quite a lot to do with alchemy then, this whole process of...
Well, yes. Yeah, there is... I mean, I, as I often say to people when I'm doing brewery tours, brewers tend to believe in magic. Mm. Because although boffins in lab coats have, of course, long ago discovered what makes beer happen, that whole transformation of starch into sugar and the breakdown of that sugar into alcohol... yes, it's all been scientifically explained. It's all to do with enzymes and yeast action and so forth. But when it's actually you there staring into the mash as it turns gold, I'm sorry, that's magical.
Lovely.
Yeah, there is always an element of magic to it. Which, of course, in the big breweries, you don't get because you sit at a distance and do the whole brew by computer.
Well, again.
Whereas the likes of us craft brewers, we get our gumboots in on and actually sort of plunge into the whole process. So it is very magical.
Are you still selling the, what do you call it, the ferment? No?
No, not at the moment.
No, we're not doing that at the moment.
No, okay. Finished product only.
Right, and are you still doing courses? Because you were doing courses?
Oh, I have, yes, I have done homebrew courses in the past. I'm just a bit busy to do them at the moment. But I'm sure at some point, yeah, we'll get back into that.
Oh, lovely, good. And so do you know anything else about, I know they're coming in next week, hopefully, to talk about the Wild Food Challenge. But are there other things that people need to know about if they want to join in or...
I think
know
it's
anything about the bigger picture.
Well, it's quite a worldwide event now. Most of the links that are being put up regarding the Waiheke Challenge do take you into the bigger picture of this whole sort of worldwide challenge of trying to forage for unusual wild foods. I can't wait to see what people come up with.
Mm.
In terms of, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some fantastic local seafood. Whether we'll end up with peacocks and pheasants and so forth on the menu, I don't know. Mm. Could certainly do with some pheasants. I mean, they are everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, what's that about? I had to kind of slow down on the sort of descent to Little O from Five
yes,
Ways because
yep.
the pheasant
pheasants
came out.
Have
thought,
even got this far.
What an unexpected place to see a pheasant.
As far as I'm aware, the rise in the pheasant numbers is entirely due to the extensive rat culling that's been going on in the back block. A lot of the landowners out there have got serious about controlling the numbers of rats, and of course the moment you kill the rats off, they stop eating the pheasant eggs, and the pheasant population booms. Like the man said, in nature there are only consequences.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But at least you can eat pheasant. I'd rather eat pheasant than rat any day.
Yeah, well, I've never eaten rat, so I'd... Yeah. But it doesn't sound too appealing, that's for sure.
No, it doesn't.
Great. So, anything else? Anything? I mean, anything else that you've noticed or you've picked up on in the papers? Or,
well, I mean,
you seem
like
to be guests down. So, if you feel like having a rabbit about something else,
oh, okay. Well, I mean, like everybody else, I've been marvelling at the hearings over the ghastly marina business.
Did you get a chance to stop in?
No, I haven't. I've been flat out working, but I've been following Meron Lawler's wonderful updates.
Aren't they great?
Every day.
You feel like you were there.
Yes,
and it's quite amazing how you know, especially if you've been on the island a while, you know all the people that she talks about.
Yeah.
It just makes you, it's almost like a kind of community binding exercise, even though it's such a shame that we're having to come together over discussions over a marina.
I mean, this is just something that we are just going to have to keep on doing. It's sad, but at least I hope that a victory for the good guys in this one will at least send the message that really, leave us alone. This is our island, this is where we live. We don't want people messing about with it. And we will fight when threatened.
Well, it's quite interesting how we spend a lot of our time sticking up for the environment and the coastline when most of us just want to go out and have a beer and do a bit of gardening. And, you know, that's why we chose to be here.
Yes.
But the price for that seems that at regular intervals we're expected to kind of defend things that... defend things that seem a little bit...
Particularly annoying when you consider that, you know, 20 years or so ago, Waiheke was not considered a particularly exotic destination. And I know people who bought property here in the 80s and their friends called them fools. It's like, oh, what do you want to go there for? It's just all a load of old hippies. But of course, you know, leave the old hippies long enough and they make the place so nice that all of a sudden the... you get these sort of arrogant developer types going, oh, nice place you got here, hippies. Move over. We want a slice of that. Mm. And I think it's great that we keep digging our heels in and going, well, no, sorry, we got here first. This is ours.
Mm. And well, I think it's also
it's a shame, of course, that this time the threat comes from within, that it is actually a local planning on wrecking stuff.
Mm.
But he, like everyone else, must be faced and defeated.
Mm. Well, I think it's the other thing is it's that thing of the value of undevelopment. You know, it is that thing of far enough behind to be ahead. You know, it's, you know, as more and more of the world becomes developed, that value of places that remain tranquil and peaceful.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to talk about places that have been excessively developed, well, I got stuck on the Gold Coast in Surfers Paradise a few years ago on a job. Now, there's a place that's been developed to its maximum, and it's awful.
Mm.
It's one of the nastiest places I've ever been. It's just loud, ugly, and just full of idiots.
Mm. Well, I know people who talk about the Isle of Wight when that bay, or, you know, where they've put in the marina, was a very peaceful fishing village, and it had a completely different atmosphere. And then when the marina came in, it completely changed the character of that spot.
Yeah.
The hearings are happening, and we'll see the outcome. I thought it was quite interesting because in the one of the things that I said, because I was asked to say something, was that, you know, when we talk about the effects being no more than minor, we should really be thinking about the effects on people, not just things.
Yeah.
Because the stuff that I'd seen had all been about traffic movements and what the traffic was doing and who had measured them and how it had been done. And it was also technical. And it seems really far removed from the people it will affect. And it was interesting because the judge said to me, oh, well, you know the RMA is designed to consider people and to include people, and the Environment Court puts that at the heart of what we do. And I didn't say anything to him, but I just thought, well, isn't that interesting? Because for me, putting people at the heart of what we do is to send round a bit of a survey saying, would you like a marina, yes or no?
Mm.
Ask the community, see what they say, and then go from there. This whole process seems so protracted and so expensive. And, in how many different ways can people express how they feel?
I know. Yeah, it's. I really hope that the judge in this case does get a sense of just how opposed we are, because you read about it in the paper, and they're going, "Oh, it's a cause that's divided the island." No, it really hasn't. I don't know anyone who wants the marina.
Mm.
Everybody I know, it's just.
And there's
something
a bit suspicious about people who want something having no face. I mean, day after day, you go into the hearings locally. There is actually the only person who is supporting it is the applicant and their lawyers.
Yeah. So who are all these other people? They don't sound like locals to me.
Well, you know, whatever. Yeah, it's just quite problematical. Anyway, any other thoughts?
No. I think everything else is brilliant.
Yes. Oh, lovely.
I should
Well, I'm looking forward to the festival.
The beer festival. Yes, be there next Saturday and Sunday.
Great. Thank you.
I think we can promise some really exciting things to eat and drink.
Wonderful. Good. See you there.
See ya.
Okay. Right. So that was Alan Knight talking about the beer fest.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
So I just spoke to Meryn. She's at home and would rather not have to come in for an interview. So I've got a little thing that was recorded yesterday by Brent, so I'm going to put that on instead. This is an interview with Meryn just after the hearings yesterday.
Talking to Meryn Lawler, who's been organising the Direction Metiatia case, or is it a case, I suppose we call it. So we're just going to have a little bit of a chat. Like, Meryn, could you sort of give us, how would you summarise what's happened this week on the island as compared to what happened perhaps the first week, which was a little bit less, people sort of not people who weren't there might not have a sort of a great understanding of what happened the first week, but they've got a little bit more of an idea of what happened this week. So how would you sort of summarise the 2 weeks so far?
This week has been pure Waiheke, full of the colour and the character that we know and love about the island. So it's largely been a week dedicated to hearing from the locals, and that includes all of the lay witnesses for Direction Matiatia and a few bright and colourful people who are 274 parties in their own right and have come along to share their insights and their objections to the marina. Whereas the first week was a much more legal process.
Yep.
It was full of, you know, well-paid lawyers and well-paid experts giving expert opinion and cross-examination.
And will, so when it goes off the island again next week into town, will that sort of go back to that kind of more legal type conversation?
Absolutely. So next week in town will be Direction Matiatia's legal case. Right. So all of our experts will be called up to give evidence. So we will return to that more formal, solemn format.
So what? How much influence do you think this perhaps more informal approach? You know, a lot of people speaking from the heart today. We've seen, you know, a little bit of impassioned reactions outside of the courtroom, which we probably won't go into. But people will hear about that. What kind of impact does this have on the overall proceedings as compared to those more sort of dry legal things?
I think that the importance of this week, and one of the reasons why we were so committed to ensuring that the Environment Court came to Waiheke, was that ultimately this case could just be argued by lawyers and experts, and ultimately we could reach exactly the same outcome. But from Direction Matiatia's perspective, it's been really important to have a forum where the court could see and hear the sort of passion that the people of the island have for Matiatia, to have an appropriate place to hold the evidence about the cultural landscape of Matiatia and the enormous sort of sway, I guess, that the Marae and Ngāti Poa have had for the better part of 2 days throughout the proceedings here. But also just to allow the court to be on the island and therefore accessible at Matiatia in terms of wandering around, seeing the landscape. They've been out on the judge's boat looking at back at the northern beach and imagining the marina and the way it will obscure the beach. So in that respect, I think it's been really important to have that role of local participation in what could otherwise be a very cut and dry legal process.
Yep. So you're two thirds into it now. You know, is it too early to call this thing?
Yeah, it probably is too early to call this, particularly as our own experts haven't given evidence.
Okay.
But Direction Matiatia still remains confident that we've got a really strong and solid case, and our lay witnesses have supported that with their passion this week.
Great. Thank you, Maren.
Thank you.
Great. So, yes, so the quality of that is because our roving reporter, Brent Simpson, got Maren just outside the hearings that were held at Ostend Hall yesterday. So that's the end of the evidence giving for the Matiatia Environment Court hearings, or court case hearings. I don't really know the difference between these things, on the island. And then next week it'll be in town at the Environment Court. So again, if anyone's got a bit of free time, a lunch break, an hour before they get into work, stop in and have a look, because it's quite a fascinating process regardless of which side you're on, or and it's just quite interesting to see how the law works, and especially in this situation, we're kind of caught in the middle of it, regardless of which side of the fence you sit on. And I have to say, I've been so proud of everyone who's been involved in the, you know, giving evidence and submitting, and has written submissions or turned up to watch or given oral submissions. I think There's been really great coverage from a variety of angles, and Merrin's done a sterling job, and of course the defence lawyers are kind of doing their best as well, and you know, just putting together a really exciting case. I'm sorry I wasn't able to see all the cultural evidence that was presented by Ngāti Power and local Maori people living on the island and who have connections to Waiheke, because I think that information is just so priceless, and those are the stories of the place that we, you know, that we have and that we really want to capture. So yes, so that's got another week to run, and try and get down. And if you want to know, Merrin is providing daily updates. Direction Mātiati is providing daily updates. So you can get those from the Direction Mātiati Facebook page, or I think they're being posted on other places in Facebook. Lovely.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.